And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Blake, because the unexpected update to the Big 12, Sorsby, saga, it has me feeling much better after last week. It felt like last week was kind of hellish. I know we're going to get into it today, but I feel like the Big 12 might have some pretty strong ground to counter here to what's going on.
Are you like John Gruden? Are you feeling kind of nicey?
I wouldn't go that far.
I don't know if I'd go that far either. We don't really come in here and bang our own drums. Mm-hmm. Last night, I thought it was funny that to end the show, I said the only way to get past this is you got to go get a federal injunction on the injunction. Today they filed in federal injunction. I don't know if a state of a court of appeals in Texas with five Texas Tech grads in the appellate court is going to overrule and rule in the favor of the NCAA. I don't know if I see that happening. I also didn't see Brendan Sorsby becoming eligible. But we will talk about the Big 12 in the NCAA fighting back here. But is there an underlying agenda from Brett Yormark and company in all of this? Why didn't you go after eligibility? Why are you trying to hit them with a financial gain? And why are you not only trying to hit them with a financial gain, if you can suspend them for the Big 12 title game, why can't you suspend him for regular season Big 12 games? Why can't you do something to Texas Tech then? So I understand, but I do feel like that they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, because they understand that Texas Tech is probably the only team that can make a push in the playoff. And Brett Yormark's trying to have his cake and eat it too, but I do think that we will get into that.
I'll wait to respond to that because I think that that's a little too conspiratorial. I'm gonna wait to respond.
Why not go after eligibility? Like, why not?
I don't want to get into it right now because I want to save it for the segment. I want to save it for the segment because I think that there's strategic maneuver by doing that that makes their case stronger, in my opinion.
For not going after eligibility?
Yeah, because they're not going after Sorsby's eligibility, because instead of saying that he shouldn't be eligible, they're trying to go after Texas Tech in order to skirt the injunction. They're not suing Texas Tech over his eligibility. They're suing Texas Tech over them violating the bylaws by playing him. So that's how I'm looking at this.
He still gets to play.
If they choose to, and if they choose to play him, they have to pay a large fine and he wouldn't be able to play in the Big 12 championship game. Plus, we don't know if the College Football Playoff Committee, who has kept the team out for a quarterback having a broken leg, that they wouldn't keep Texas Tech out for having Brendan Sorsby playing quarterback. We can save getting into that.
He'd be able to play the College Football Playoff. They haven't come down with a ruling saying that he can't play in the playoff.
But the College Football Playoff Committee decides who gets in. They said Florida State couldn't play because of
Jordan Travis. 12 teams.
It doesn't matter. Because they chose to not let a team play because they had an injured quarterback.
Joe, that's apples and oranges. I'm sorry, but that's apples and oranges. If they go undefeated in the Big 12 and beat the dog crap out of the Big 12 champion, and the Big 12 champion's got to have an automatic bid, how do you keep them out? I could literally roll reverse this on you and say, hey, remember when Alabama beat Georgia in the playoff or in the SEC championship game? That's what really kept Florida State out. Because the truth of the matter wasn't
what really kept them out. They didn't want Florida State to go out there and get trounced. That was what they didn't want.
Really? That's interesting. Because two teams had one loss and one had zero. And the SEC champion got in, and that being the University of Alabama.
And because the most obvious team to get in would have been the undefeated team.
Hold on. Texas beat Alabama. So Texas gets in, Alabama gets in, Washington is undefeated, and Michigan is undefeated.
they kept out Florida State. They literally cited it for why they kept Florida State out because of George Travis's injury.
Would they have kept out the SEC champion?
That's not related to what we're talking about. The point is that the committee has the ability to keep a team out if they chose to for a very specific reason like that.
Yeah, sure. Sounds good. In a four-team playoff.
That doesn't – the size doesn't matter. The size of the playoff doesn't matter.
Don't tell that to women. I've been trying to convince women of that for generations.
I don't have that issue. I don't have the issue that you do.
You 1,000% have that issue. We all have that issue. Nevertheless, we're alive. We've gone way too far into this. Do us a favor by hitting the like and share. Share to all those groups from the YouTube channel. Share to all the, by the way, YouTube doing Messenger now? Have you seen this? We got a message on Twitter.
On Twitter we did.
I mean on YouTube. On YouTube? Excuse me.
What?
Yeah, somebody like sent a direct message or something. Am I going crazy?
I don't know. I got to check that. I don't know if that's that. I think you might have been. Did you not see a? Was it a comment that you saw?
Maybe. Nevertheless, share to Facebook. We greatly appreciate it. Share the YouTube channel. Subscribe down below. We greatly appreciate you doing that. Wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. And if you're watching on 24/7 Sports Twitter page, do us a favor. Hit that like button and retweet as well. Every episode is brought to you by our good friends and partners over at 24/7 Sports. So much recruiting news is hitting the airways right now. Big-time offensive linemen across the nation are committing. Abraham Sesse, is he going to be going to Notre Dame? There are a lot of big-time national guys that will be committing here soon. So go over to 24/7 Sports. Get your annual VIP membership today by using the promo code RJ60. You'll get 60% off of your annual VIP membership. Again, that's RJ60. RJ60 at checkout. Get 60% off your order. All right, Joe, let's get into it. So we are going to get into the Sorsby Big 12 case here, but I want to get to something also in here with you as well. Steve Sarkisian came out today and said that it's not a foregone conclusion that his starting quarterback and Arch Manning will be leaving the Texas Longhorns at the end of the season and going to the NFL draft. I'm paraphrasing on basically what he said. I do think that there was some sound logic in there and what he said. Again, I do think Steve Sarkisian's words, yet again for the third straight time, have been kind of taken a little bit out of context. But what are your thoughts on Arch Manning potentially going back to Texas next year? We haven't even played the season yet. But I don't think he was completely off base. I'll explain why in just a moment. Well, what are your thoughts on this whole Arch Manning? Does he live out what I think Sark called the Manning legacy, which I don't think was completely wrong here?
Well, one, he brought up that he does think it's going to be dependent on how he plays. I think that first and foremost, if Arch plays well, but he's not the foregone first overall pick, why wouldn't he take advantage of the opportunity to regain, or not regain, but the opportunity to bolster his draft stock and potentially get picked higher and to become the first overall pick? He has that extra year available to him. I think Sark brought up a lot of good points. He has shown that he's loved the University of Texas. He would not have stayed there as long as he did with Quinn Ewers starting over him. If he wanted to get on the field sooner, he would have gone somewhere else. He makes enough money in NIL where it's not the same as a rookie contract for a quarterback, but he's making a lot of money. He's doing pretty well for himself. Like, I think that the biggest part with this has much more to do with the available options for where he could land and has less to do probably with his desire to stay and to continue to be a Texas Longhorn. As much as he might want to, he has a really good parachute. He is a part of one of the biggest brands in college football that is only going to continue to fill his pockets. And he's going to be on a championship contending team if he decides to go back for 2027. The other opposite side of this is if he declares for the draft, and right now the teams that are in the running for the first overall pick are the Arizona Cardinals, which is a tiny market, very, very small market. Is that where he wants to play? Does he want to play where there's the, arguably the franchise with the smallest fan base in the entire NFL? Do you go play in Arizona? Do you go to the Jets?
Andy. Peyton went to Indy, and that was a small ass market when he went.
It was
a small ass market.
I don't disagree with that, but I would argue, just from like personal experience from when I've worked places, whenever there's been Arizona sports, just Arizona sports topics in general, we've avoided them because we know that people will not consume that content because nobody cares in Arizona. It's I'm sorry, that's just the truth. But do you want to, you know, kind of fall into not as much recognition in a small market like that? Do you go to the Jets that have been inept and terrible, and do you succumb to being a part of a bad franchise like that? And also the Browns are the other team. Unless there was another franchise that was willing to trade up unexpectedly, maybe if the Steelers were really bad this upcoming year and he could end up with the Steelers. I think that at the end of the day, Blake, he controls all the cards. I don't think that this is such a crazy statement if anyone thinks that it is.
I think it's not a crazy statement for something completely different than what you just stated.
Okay.
I'm old enough to remember when Peyton Manning had 3 years of starting underneath his belt and came back for his senior year. Do you want to hear something very interesting? Mm-hmm. Peyton Manning in his career at Tennessee had 1,381 passing attempts. Now, I understand, okay, that in those days, it wasn't necessarily under Philip Fulmer pass happy. David Cutcliffe was. Eli Manning at Ole Miss, in his first year starting, threw the ball 450 times. He had 1,363 attempts. And in living in the state of Louisiana when they hold the Manning camp, do you know what Archie says all the time? Every single year, how he starts off the Manning Passing Academy. Nothing replaces college reps preparing you for the NFL. At this exact moment, Arch Manning sits at 499. So let's just say he gets 400 this year. Mm-hmm. That'll get him to 1800. Or excuse me. That'll get him to, he's got 500 now. Let's just round up. That'll get him to 900. Another 400, another year will get him to what number? 1300. So I do wonder if this is not a unique case as much as it is a unique case with them, bar none. Let me give another example of something. When Arch Manning became the number one player in the country, he still played basketball and was a sixth man. He could have instantly quit. He didn't need to play. We need to understand that this is not the typical situation of quarterbacks and quarterback situations when it comes to them. Can I see him returning? Joe, I got to be blunt with you. I can see him returning, barring that they win the SEC, barring they win a national title and there's nothing else left for him to do. Because if you remember, Eli returns, they're a one-loss team, Nick Saban beats Ole Miss and David Cutcliffe, LSU goes on to win a national title. If you remember, Peyton came back because he wanted to go and win a national title. They didn't do it until the year after, ironically, with a team that came back and was completely stacked. I think that Arch has the mindset of what the Mannings have already shown. What are some of the other quarterbacks that they have been tied to in Omaha Productions? Now, this is a little bit of a reach for me, but I look at the starting quarterback at Oregon. Guess how many passing attempts he's away from 1,300? One more season. Now, I'm not saying 1,300 is this magical ass number. I'm not trying to say that it is. But I do look at their past and some of the guys that they have not only monitored, but like three and a half, four weeks ago, you had the starting quarterback at Oregon doing an Omaha Productions recap. You have Garrett Nussmeier returning to try to get 1,300. So maybe is it conspiratorial by me? Maybe. But I've also saw his two uncles that would have been number one overall picks when they would have entered as juniors return. For what reason? By the way, they didn't have NIL. They didn't have NIL. Arch can easily make $5 million in TV rev share and NIL if he returns. He doesn't have to make these level of decisions. So I look at some of these situations of 1,300 pass, like 1,381, 1,363. He's at 500 total. I just don't believe, Joe, that they look at situations and say, what is an extra year? I think they look at this and say, we don't have to make financial decisions. We can make the right decision for us. Now, can I go full conspiratorial on you?
Okay, go ahead.
Jimmy Haslam and Peyton are extremely close. Extremely close. You have Pilot that is on the field at Tennessee. You have an Omaha 2 years ago. You have Jimmy Haslett sitting next to Peyton Manning in the middle of Omaha. You have an Elite Eight run by Tennessee. You have Jimmy Haslett sitting next to Peyton Manning. I don't know if the Myles Garrett move with Jarrett Verse isn't necessarily them trying to gear up to some extent to try to move with two first-round picks to go get that number one pick and go get Arch too. So that's my little conspiracy theory of how close the Haslets are to the Manning camp. It would not surprise me if the next Cleveland Browns quarterback draftee, his name's Arch Manning.
You mean Haslam, right? Not Haslett.
That's a Haslam.
Yeah, I'm just double checking. Yeah. Jim Haslett was a former NFL head coach. It was just double
checking. Yeah, the Saints head coach. I don't know what go look at the Tennessee sidelines in the booster that's backing them. It's Pilot Oil and Gas.
I always forget that he is a Tennessee alum. So that's a fair point. It's certainly a fair possible close. Point.
I was literally at the Tennessee LSU series, and the dude is walking like with the Tennessee boosters. He's with the team in the middle of Baton Rouge. And everybody's just kind of like, what is going on? This is literally a year ago. And everybody's like, yeah, that's the owner of the Cleveland Browns. And I'm like, uh-huh. He's coming to see if Tony Vitello's leaving to go to San Francisco. That's what he's really doing. He's monitoring the situation heavy. Look, that's conspiratorial of me, okay? But I do fully believe that they believe that the reps in college do amount to a lot, and I don't think this is far-fetched for him as much as it would be for somebody else. Now, if this were like, I don't know, Joe, name a random quarterback just off the top of your head in college. Julian Sain. As an example, Julian Sain goes off, wins a national title, has an elite year. I just don't expect him to come back. I don't expect him to come back at all. Arch Manning, we've seen two of his uncles literally do it.
Right. I think that context is what both pieces of context of what I brought up and what you brought up, I think, combine for a case for something that can happen that many people just assumed was a foregone conclusion that he was going to be in the 2027 NFL draft. Now, at the end of the day, I do really think that he is talented enough that if, as long as he shows improvement, he will probably be the foregone first overall pick.
I completely agree.
It just all comes down to, does he want to be able to determine where he lands? Right now, the options of teams that desperately, desperately need quarterbacks, like it's bad. Those are not good settings. The Haslam connection is interesting because that would be maybe the one thing that mitigates all of this, but does maybe Peyton having such a close relationship with him and understanding of what's really going on in Cleveland and why they're not very good? Because Haslam's had over-involvement that led to some of their most brutal recent moves, particularly the Deshaun Watson trade and signing that has crippled their franchise. Maybe the inverse happens there. It's like, well, he's close with Haslam, but he doesn't want Arch to be anywhere near that. Who knows? I do really think that the important context that you brought up with Eli playing a lot in college, Peyton playing a lot in college, there are connections that we can continuously make with the two of them into Arch that continuously show up with their careers. It's not like it's just random guessing. This family has operated in a completely different manner than every other recruit and prospect has done in the past. At the end of the day, Eli Manning did the whole bit that he did with the Chargers and with the Giants. I know that it's a cliche that people keep bringing that up. Like Eli, if he pulled an Eli, he pulled an Eli. Arch is going to pull an Eli if he needs to. It happened. They're very protective. They're very deliberate. They're very calculated. There is no just jumping to the next thing because he can jump to the next thing. If you play well, you win a national championship. Sometimes guys like the thought of like, hey, why don't we, let's go back and win another one. I can go down as the greatest college football quarterback of all time. You win two national championships.
Oh, he ain't doing that.
I'm just saying, if he theoretically
he
did.
He ain't doing that. They ain't doing that.
Watch, bookmark, somebody clip that right now for 2 years from now.
They're not winning back-to-back national titles. Won't happen.
Hey, man, keep down.
However, the Mannings and the Haslams, Manning often partners with Haslam in family charitable causes. The two have been linked in major multi-million dollar contributions to University of Tennessee, committing gifts to Pat Summit Foundation, where Jimmy Haslam serves as the board chairman. You mean to tell me that Haslam goes and tells Peyton, I need money for Tennessee, and he gives him a couple of million dollars and their relationship sucks?
I'm not saying it sucks.
I'm not saying you do. What I'm saying is them sitting next door or next to each other in Omaha during a national championship run, you mean to tell me that they're not trying to gear up for this? I'm sorry. I don't buy it. I feel like Cleveland, as an example. Here's my NFL take, and I don't talk to the NFL hardly at all, if ever. Uh-huh. Here's my opinion on Cleveland. They're predictable. Whether it's the Deshaun Watson situation, whether it's the Myles Garrett situation, whether it's been situations in the past. Joe, I tweeted this during the draft, okay? So it's out there. When Sanders started to fall, I literally tweeted, here comes Cleveland. Because they are the most predictable organization. They can't get out of their own way. You know what I mean? They just always do it. I'm sorry. I'm just conspiratorial on it. You know what I'm not conspiratorial on, though? The Mannings have shown a history of staying a little bit longer and getting those reps to then prepare themselves for the NFL. I don't know if that won't happen again.
Yeah, I don't even, I'm going to be straight with you. I don't even think that is a conspiracy.
No, that part's
not. I think that's like chances? Great evidence.
What are the
that's
chances?
That's the least conspiratorial thing you've ever said on this show.
Thank you.
Like, it's the most founded thing that you've ever said on this show.
Well, how ironic is it that both of them have 1,300 passing attempts? By the way, Eli didn't start as a freshman until halfway through. One has 1,381, the other has 1,363. That's not ironic. That's not like happenstance. You mean to tell me that Peyton Manning wouldn't have been the number one pick the year before? Come on, bro. Come on. And by the way, knowing good and damn well, the first time that they went through all of this, that Ryan Leaf would be there. It's not like Ryan Leaf just came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were killing it at Washington State. So it's not as if they're not scared to go too. Which, by the way, everybody says Jamarcus was the biggest bust. There wasn't a quarterback behind Jamarcus that did what Peyton Manning did. So I lied, Ryan Leaf, the whole pick there is even worse. I'm sorry, it's even worse. I mean, literally the pick after is arguably the second best quarterback ever.
I'm not going to disagree with that.
You can't disagree with that. All right. Let's move forward here. Oh, boy. Here we go again.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about Brendan Sorsby. So, Joe, as we talked about last night, maybe Brett Yormark was listening. Probably not. The Big 12 has filed a legal complaint in federal court on Texas Tech and Texas AG Ken Paxton. In the complaint, they state that they are trying to enforce bylaws for the Sorsby situation. The federal judge is going to have to permit that on the temporary injunction in a Texas state court that the Big 12 is able to enforce their bylaws. In this suit/complaint, the Big 12 is not going out of eligibility here. They are going after the Texas Tech, not being committal to sitting Brendan Sorsby for the season. They're looking for monetary compensation, and they're also talking about a potential being a Big 12 suspension of their title game. Brett Yormark did come out with a statement before we went live here, Joe, stating that he just had a meeting with the ADs and presidents, and every option is on the table, quote unquote. What are your thoughts about the Big 12 firing back here? Now, as the Oklahoma and Kansas, both attorney generals in those states, have also fired back, backing the Big 12 in their legal complaint federally.
I think that all of this, one, the lawsuit's brilliant. And two, I mean, this whole thing is just, it's hilarious. Like, it was pointed out, there was one individual on Twitter who I want to make sure I give him the proper credit. I bookmarked it. David McKenzie, who is an intellectual property lawyer and a Duke alum, he pointed out that essentially the stupidity by Texas Tech, or sorry, by Texas's AG, Ken Paxton, you are a moron, Ken Paxton, overstepping unnecessarily, writing that letter, threatening the Big 12 for violating antitrust laws if they were to do something about Texas Tech playing Brendan Sorsby. What he did not realize is that he just wrote the countersuit for them. He opened an opportunity for the Big 12 to take this to federal court, because before that, there weren't really any grounds, theoretically, for them to have taken this to court. It would have just been a meeting. It would not have been a response to a very aggressive letter written by the Texas Attorney General. The involvement of the Oklahoma Attorney General and now the Kansas Attorney General also even more empowers them to be able to pull this entire thing off. Like, I think that the biggest bit with this, there's two things that give the Big 12 ultimate power and why I have faith that they're going to really screw Texas Tech and force them to make a tough decision. Because if you really want to support Brendan Sorsby, pay the fine and miss the Big 12 championship game if that really means so much to you. The fact that they referenced that this has nothing to do with Brendan Sorsby, the individual, and it has nothing to do with his recovery and Texas Tech's supporting of him, but has everything to do, and they cited articles, columns that were written, that there is a potential to do irreparable harm to the conference's reputation for damaging the integrity of their competition. That I thought was very, very pointed. The other major bit with this, Blake, is that they pointed out how Texas Tech, they are gigantic hypocrites, because they voted to sanction Baylor in 2017 amid their sexual assault scandal. And they supported the 25% of its revenue distribution being withheld to Baylor. Now, all of a sudden, when it's in their circumstance, the tables are turned and they're demanding that there is some sort of antitrust violation, which is not true, according to this lawsuit, if Brendan Sorsby were not allowed to be allowed to be on the field. Like, I think that the Big 12 has the most power that it could have possibly had, and I applaud them because this is the counter move that needed to be distributed.
Why is nobody talking about his eligibility then?
Can I respond, or do you have...
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that if you're deliberate about not taking away his eligibility and instead forcing Texas Tech to be the ones to take him off the field, it makes it a lot more complicated for Texas Tech and the state of Texas to counter the Big 12 suit.
In what way?
Because the injunction declares that he should be eligible and he should be allowed to play. So it has nothing to do with Sorsby. It has everything to do with Texas Tech.
Okay. First off, a federal judge is going to know that it literally is revolved around Brendan Sorsby.
Yeah, but they're gonna get into the weeds with the words of this stuff. I understand that they're gonna know that, but
this is literally about the integrity, because they're potentially going to play Brendan Sorsby. You can't come back and say then it's not about Brendan Sorsby to fight a legal argument. I'm sorry. That's fugazi, and that's fake, and that's
That's how every lawyer operates. That's how they all operate.
And Joe, You can't go. I don't care if you're a lawyer or not. Guess what you can't do in the public eye or in the court of law? You can't go in there and say that this is not about Brendan Sorsby. And because the judge is going to ask, then who is it about? You can't go and say this isn't about Brendan Sorsby and then say, well, we're going to give him sanctions about a Big 12 title game that they can't play in and sanctions that if he does play, by the way, for something that they haven't done. Just because Texas Tech has stated that they're not going to fully agree to that now on a situation and matter that hasn't happened. By the way, he hasn't hit the field. So now you're going to have to go into a – this is what we talked about yesterday. You can't go in there and have your cake and eat it too. You can't say that this is not about Brendan Sorsby when it is about Brendan Sorsby. You are asking for them to be sanctioned on the behalf of them potentially, not that they have, potentially playing him. By the way, I told you this. You can't go into a court system – okay, because this will go for appeal too. You can't go into a court system and say they had the intention of playing him when they haven't done it yet. So let me ask you this. So let's protect Texas Tech for just
a
moment.
Wait. This is where I think that we're – I don't mean to cut you off, but this is where I think that we're off base. The lawsuit's not about – the lawsuit is about their right to be able to sanction Texas Tech. It is – that is what they're suing.
Sanction
they're
him for what?
They're suing to prove that the state of Texas cannot file a lawsuit for the $200 million in damages because they have the right to exercise their First Amendment right and to hold members accountable for their bylaws. That is what they're suing for. They are not suing to counter the injunction. That's not what they're doing.
I got that. They haven't sued. A threat is not a suit. They're trying to get out in front of a situation yet again that has not happened. You're saying they're, let me tell you the two things that they're coming after this, that you're right. They're talking about the $200 million lawsuit potentially that could be filed on Paxton. It hasn't happened yet. A threat is a threat. Hey, Joe, for legality's sake, this is just a happenstance and me giving an example. I'm going to punch you in the face. Can I go to court? Can you arrest me?
That's a threat. Yeah.
I'm going to punch you in the face. I didn't say when. I didn't say how. I didn't say with my left hand or my right hand. Joe, I want to punch you in the face. What's the difference? Me threatening you in two different ways is completely ways different ways on how you act on it. You can't tell somebody that they haven't sued you yet. They threatened to sue you. They did it publicly. I think what's happening here is people are wanting this to happen. Like, for example, I'm with you. I want them to win. I do want the Big 12 to win. At the same time, there has to be some level of protection. Has the Attorney General of Texas sued the Big 12? Yes or no?
No, but he overextended himself by writing that letter because that implicated that he tried to threaten them, which enabled the Big 12 to be able to come back around. Because if he hadn't done that, you're right. Wait. If he had,
says a real estate attorney on Twitter.
But he had, no, intellectual property lawyer. But they're still lawyers. We're not lawyers. I'm gonna trust the.
There are also lawyers.
Law school. They're more, way more trained to interpret this shit than we are.
You can find a lawyer that will also come out and state that if somebody hasn't done something yet, you can't sanction them for saying that they won't agree to something. Then come down with a ruling.
But that's okay. But that's where I think that we're getting the disconnect here. Is the suit is not them sanctioning them. The suit is to say that Texas has no right to step in and that they have the right to sanction them. That is what the suit is.
Then do it. And then why don't you
but
do
they
it?
Can't, but they can't sanction them unless Sorsby steps on the field.
Exactly. Thank you. You literally just proved my point.
I'm not disagreeing with that. They need the ability to sanction him when that comes to fruition because they will put him on the
field. Sounds good, but they haven't done it yet. So again, just because Texas Tech does not agree, you just admitted that this is about Brendan Sorsby and eligibility. You didn't sue over eligibility. So you just got into the confines of eligibility. So you just opened up yourself into the eligibility case of this. You said that now they want to go into the eligibility part of this. They want to get out in front of enforcing their bylaws and saying and talking about eligibility and enforcement, the eligibility rules. That's already been ruled. So you just literally got yourself into a rock and a hard place, admitting that this is about eligibility. So now I'm going to go back and ask a simple question. Why didn't you go after him for eligibility then? Because
they're not directly doing it. They're not.
You just admitted
to be able to pull this off. No, I did not just admit that this was for eligibility.
Your literal and exact words were that they were trying to get out in front in reference to the eligibility of Brendan Sorsby.
I didn't say the word eligibility. You put the word eligibility in my mouth.
Okay.
I didn't say the word eligibility.
Let me rephrase it then. You said about him playing on the field. That means eligibility.
Yes.
Sorry, buddy.
They're trying to be able... Okay, they can't sanction him unless he plays. They need to be able to prove that they have the right to sanction Texas Tech the second that he steps on the field. So what that would mean is if he played in game three this year, then they could hand down the monetary fine and then they didn't go after that.
They said that they're going to give them a monetary fine per Ross Dellinger and that they'd want to keep him out of the Big 12 title game. They did not talk about the regular season of eligibility. So now which one is it?
That's not the point. They don't have to do it. The point is that they need to be able to. They can't take away Brendan Sorsby's eligibility. They can't. The injunction stated that they're forcing Texas Tech into a situation where they would get screwed over if they put Sorsby on the field. That's my point.
How would they get screwed over then? Because
by having to pay a large fine or not playing the Big 12 championship.
You think that Cody Campbell gives two shits about a monetization issue when he spent this level of money to get him back to a playoff? Here's the truth. Here's what I believe. I'm sorry. Joe, if he gets to play the regular season, screw the Big 12 title game. You think the Big 12 title game means anything to them? They didn't need an automatic bid last year to be in the Final Four. If they start blowing out teams like they did again last year, you're not going to have a choice. The college football playoff will have to keep them out. That's a whole different conversation for a different day. They did not go after his eligibility outside of the Big 12 title game. That's all that they're saying. Pay a massive fine and he can't play in a meaningless ass Big 12 title game, which, by the way, if I'm Kessler, you know what I'm saying? Knock, knock, knock. Hey, Brett Yormark. Did you or did you not try to say that the Big 12 title games were irrelevant? I think that Yormark, for what it's worth, is trying to have his cake and eat it too. He's trying to have these presidents come out and say, hey, we don't like this. Sounds good. We're going to try to do something. But in the back of his mind, he knows that Texas Tech is the only school in his conference that can make a run in the playoff. With Brendan Sorsby, by the way.
I think that you're going way too far with this because, Blake, like I said to you at the beginning of the show, do you really, really believe that the College Football Playoff Selection Committee would willingly, after all of this, put Texas Tech in their top 12? Do you think that they would feel comfortable with that?
Yes. Can I tell you why? Because let's just say that whatever happens, happens. Let's say that he does play the season. Give me just a second. If let's just say he plays for the next 6 months, does Sorsby, and they beat the dog manure out of everybody, you know what the College Football Playoff can come out and say? We do not get involved in the court rulings. This has already been decided in court that his eligibility is here. You know how I know? They've let other players that have been non-eligible and that went to court for a TRO play. Ask Lewis Murphy. Ask Xavier Lucas. So at what point do you get to a situation where other eligibilities have requested and needed a TRO to play of eligibility? Brendan Sorsby literally can come out in a week and say, hey, they let people who weren't eligible sued and got a TRO and then came back and they were able to play in the college football playoff.
But we both know, and everybody on this planet knows, that those circumstances are not the same thing as what Brendan Sorsby did. I would argue though, and this has been a meltdown by the Big 12, the meltdown response that built all of this by the Big 12 athletic directors, I can call it now that if this came to fruition, that all 11 remaining teams of the college football playoff would say, we aren't playing. We're not doing this. We're not letting it. Because theoretically, if Texas Tech is that good and they go to a national championship, I think that if all 11 teams communicated with one another and said that we're not going out there, there's no forfeit that's happening.
Go play them. That's soft. Go play them.
That's not soft. We have spoken in support of the Big 12 doing exactly this. Why are you turning heel right now?
Because the Big 10 came out on Friday and the presidents and ADs of the Big 10 said, if you want to play them, play them.
Because they don't need feel the need to get involved with it. I bet you right now that if it came down to that after the playoff bracket was built, that those teams would choose not to play against it. Because that would devalue the college football playoff. That would completely devalue
it. Now we're worried about the devaluing of college football playoff. Joey,
do you not agree that it would completely destroy the integrity of the college football playoff if they let a kid gamble on his own team?
You're asking me two different questions.
No, I'm not.
No, you're saying what you believe and what you want to happen. We've literally...
No. What?
Joey, you literally just said that the Brendan Sorsby situation didn't have to do anything with eligibility. Then we brought up eligibility in it.
It doesn't have anything to do with eligibility. It literally is stated in there that they're not talking about eligibility. Blake, you're wrong about this. The fact that you think that 11 teams would go out there and play in the college football playoff after all of that shit, they wouldn't. They would refuse to play Texas Tech.
The PR move behind that would make it look like that they are soft if they did that.
The PR move of letting him play completely destroys the integrity of the championship.
Okay, then why didn't Tony Battiti do it and came out in a statement and literally said this past Friday?
Because it's not his conference. It's not his conference.
Okay.
It's not his conference.
The SEC and the Big Ten give a shit if they go out there and play him and beat him down? You know what the PR move behind that would be? We still beat the dog shit out of you. That's what the PR move would be. The bottom line of this is, I'm sorry, Joe, you're saying that I'm wrong on an eligibility case. You don't have a
case. It's not eligibility for the 100th time. They're not suing him for his eligibility.
Joe, listen, if you don't go after a situation of a suit in this entire situation, if you're saying that you want to enforce your laws, what laws? You can't. There's nothing that you can do that says about Brendan Sorsby playing that doesn't talk about his eligibility. It's bottom line fact. You can't say that he cannot play and then not talk about the eligibility of him playing. That is literally the foundation of all of this.
They're not the ones keeping him off the field. They're forcing Texas Tech to take them off the field.
That's literally then taking his eligibility away.
That is not taking their eligibility away.
And tell Texas Tech that you cannot play him. Does that make him eligible or not eligible?
Blake, no, it does not make him ineligible. It doesn't make him ineligible.
It literally makes him ineligible if you tell him that he cannot play.
That's not how ineligibility works.
Bylaws saying that he cannot play because of gambling, that means he's ineligible.
The bylaws that they're referring to are their ability to sanction the team. You can
come here and tell me that I'm wrong, but I'm not. It's literally the foundation of all of this.
But the biggest part that you're wrong with is that you really legitimately think that the College Football Playoff Committee that kept Jordan Travis out of the College Football Playoff, Florida State out of the College Football Playoff, despite having the most dominant team that year out of the mix because of a broken leg, they would not let Texas Tech play. There's no shot.
You want to bet?
There's no shot that they would let Texas Tech play.
Then you know what? Then call for the college football playoff to make a ruling saying that if Texas Tech plays Brendan Sorsby, that you will keep him out.
They don't need to do that right now.
Why not?
They don't need to. Because the Big 12 is in the middle of handling this.
They can end it with one blow. They can say, Texas Tech, you will not be eligible for the playoff if you play Brendan Sorsby. And guess what? They don't want to fight a legal battle. That's all that this is.
You're right that they don't want to get involved and that's why the Big 10 didn't want to get involved.
So
they don't want to deliberately to open more legal battles for no reason.
What happens if Brendan Sorsby is eligible and wins and they win and he plays throughout the season, sanctions of the Big 12 title game or not? You know what they're going to come out and say? this went to court and he played throughout the season and they dominated everybody. They literally put them as the number four seed a year ago when they didn't earn it.
Not with a quarterback who gambled on his own team.
No, I agree. And I don't believe that he should play. But everybody talking about that this lawsuit does not revolve around his eligibility for a Big 12 title game or eligibility in general. I'm sorry. It's wrong. Because you can't tell a team that he can't play and not talk about being eligible or not eligible. I'm sorry. You can't get around it.
Yes, you can, Blake. And that's my whole point, Blake. That's my whole point with this, with the creativity of what they're doing with the lawsuit. Like, this is how lawyers win these things, is by rewording the situation in order to be in their favor. It has been something that's happened to death in college football.
Name a time that this has happened.
Okay, that's a ridiculous question to ask of me because I'm not going to be able to remember that off the top of my
head. Joe, this situation's never happened. We can't say that this has happened in college football all the time when this has literally never happened.
This happens with the manipulation of facts and wording with all of the eligibility cases that have happened with like Trinidad Chambliss, with Owen Heineke, with Chandler Morris, Diego Pavia. Diego Pavia is actually a really good example because they're trying to manipulate the fact that they tried to manipulate the fact that they're trying to prove because he didn't play NCAA football, but he played JUCO football, that shouldn't count towards his eligibility. So the manipulation of wording is an intention by the lawyers in able to be able to win this thing.
Joe, they literally had a federal lawsuit on Xavier Lucas. Did they keep Miami out?
Xavier Lucas didn't bet on his own team. That didn't violate the integrity of the game.
It didn't violate tampering.
No,
doesn't violate the integrity of the game.
You and I both know that nobody had the same response to what happened with Xavier Lucas or any of these other players that were tampered with compared to what happened with Brandon Sorsby. There is a far different level of response.
And you're breaking the integrity of the game. Just because this one's the highest level of the integrity doesn't mean that integrity hasn't been broken in other situations which you let slide. Which they did. They did. Let me ask you this question. What's the integrity of Miami going out and paying $8 million to get a quarterback from a team in their own conference?
It's not the same thing. And I think that you're creating a separate argument that is not related to this.
But you're talking about going and putting your foot down. They don't want to put their foot down on anything. They haven't put their foot down on anything. The college football playoff isn't going to put their foot down on anything. I'm sorry.
They literally did it with a kid with a broken leg. They put their foot down with a kid with a broken leg.
Joe, I'm sorry to tell you this. Alabama was going to get in and the SEC champion was going to get in.
Jordan Travis is on the field, that wasn't happening.
You're right. Florida State would have gotten in over Alabama.
Correct.
You're making a situation, which by the way, Alabama was a better football team than them at the time. And you know that.
That has nothing to do with.
Video upon video of you saying that Florida State should not have been in. Now you're advocating for them being in.
No, but that's not what I'm doing. You're manipulating what I'm stating.
Integrity or eligibility. The dude broke his leg. If he was,
that's my point. They kept him out of competition.
You can't come out and say that this is not an eligibility case when it's literally the foundation.
Because they can keep out whoever they want. That's my point, Blake.
And why did you have to go to court to try to remedy this situation if you could do whatever you wanted? Don't tell me you can do whatever you wanted when you had to go and sue federally to say that you could do it. You're asking a federal court to do your own bylaws. So don't tell me that this isn't about eligibility.
This is empowering them, though. I don't know why you think that this – is your whole argument against this that you don't think that this is a strong – I think that you're –
No, I don't think it's a strong argument. You know why? Because you're not going after literally the one thing that you have to go after. What is your bylaw? Brett Yormark was asked today, what is your bylaw that he violated? He said everything's open for us to make a determination. The other thing that he told Ross Dellinger was that this is a monetary fine. You mean to tell me that your punishment to him is so that you get more money to distribute to the universities and he can't play in a Big 12 title game, but he can play in the regular season? And you're asking me if this is just. No, you should go after everything.
Because they can't keep them off the field. The Big 12 can't take them off the field. They can't.
You mean it's okay?
They don't have the right to.
Really? Because Brett Yarmark put his foot in his mouth saying that gambling in the Big 12 is not permitted. He was at Cincinnati.
The injunction. Okay, but Cincinnati didn't know that this was happening at the time.
Cincinnati was the one that filed an injunction on a $1 million buyback of a situation and then came out and said that he was gambling there in time.
They didn't come out and say that he was. And if they became privy to it, it was because the Ohio Gaming Commission started the investigation that then prompted the NCAA's investigation.
Then why can't Brett Yarmark use that? That's against your bylaw.
Because the injunction states that he is allowed to play.
Ah.
The injunction states he's allowed to play. So they're forcing Texas Tech to be the ones to keep him
off the field. The only one that can overrule the eligibility injunction is a federal court. Why didn't you go after the eligibility part? Google this right now. A federal court system can overrule the injunction that happened for eligibility. Google it for yourself. But instead, they sued for monetization and they sued for not being in a Big 12 title game. A federal judge can come out and say that you cannot do this and he is ineligible. You understand that?
I just think that it's a ridiculous way to take this, that you think that this is some sort of ploy by Yarmark to try and get a second.
It is a ploy, which
if they were good enough to. There's zero chance that is his priority.
He wants Texas Tech in that playoff because of Google it. Please Google it.
I'm not Googling it.
Okay, well, I will. A federal judge can overrule a state TRO. So if they came out in a federal court system and said the TRO is bullshit, guess what happens? He is ineligible. But you didn't go after that. So what is this game then? If a federal judge can overrule a state's TRO, please explain to me why didn't you go after the eligibility part then?
Because that's the NCAA's fight. The eligibility and handling of it is the NCAA's fight, which was something that we were supposed to bring up and talk about. That is not what this is over. This is over proving that they can sanction Texas Tech if they chose to, because the members of the Big 12 believe that they should be sanctioned.
Then why can't the Big 12 do it then? If the NCAA can't do it, then why can't they? They went to a federal court system. You're the one that went to a federal court system to do this and to start off with. He wants Texas Tech to play in this playoff.
I don't know how, with all the pressure that they're facing right now, that you think that that's what the Big 12's priority is.
I think Brett Yarmark, with all due respect to him, I'm not saying this as him being a bad person. I think he's snaky. Because every single situation that he has come out on, by the way, and stated, he flipped on Greg Sankey, he flipped on Tony Petitti, he flipped on eligibility, he flipped when Ted Cruz told him to flip. When is he not going to flip for anybody when it's beneficially gained for him? He's literally done it in our face the last 365 days, and I'm supposed to sit here and say, wait a minute, you went to a federal court system, you know that a federal court system can overrule a state TRO, and yet you didn't go after it when you still sued him.
Because, Blake, at the end of the day, again, it is far more powerful for them to force Texas Tech to be the ones to take them off the field. I'm going to keep repeating that.
I just got a text. Are you mad at Mr. Joe? Who do you think that text is from?
That's from Ben. I want to bring up the NCAA
is trying to ask for the appeal to be moved up before the season. Your thoughts on them trying to get this appeal moved up?
Yeah, because theoretically, I think that this is also a good move, which I'm sure that you disagree with me on.
I agree that it's a good move. This is the one thing we're going to agree on.
The supplemental draft is on June 22nd. Requesting the appeal to be moved up to August 28th is putting Brendan Sorsby in a really difficult situation. Plus, and this is why I think that the Big 12 lawsuit operated the way that it did, that there probably was some sort of communication between the NCAA and the Big 12 to put extra pressure on him. But there's now pressure that he could get taken off the field by Texas Tech because of the Big 12's lawsuit. And there's now pressure that if he waits until after the supplemental draft, and the appeal goes through on August 28th, and they determine that the TRO should be, that the injunction should be dissolved, then he is screwed. He is SOL. He is out of options. It is very risky for them to do that. So instead of requesting the appeal for his benefit and saying, we need it this week before the supplemental draft, we want it on August 28th, right before the season. I think that that timing of it is going to put them in a real serious pinch. And I think that with all this happening, Blake, at the end of the day, there is enough potential momentum that it could put them in a position where they don't even let any of these things come to fruition. They just say, screw it. And Brandon Sorsby decides to declare because he does not want to miss out on getting to play this upcoming year. Because that would be far worse for his draft stock than it would be for him to enter the supplemental draft.
February 8, 2027 is the official trial date that remains for the college football playoff, for Brennan Sorsby's trial. February 8, 2027 is the trial date set for a final decision by the judge.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
That's why they really want it moved up, because if it doesn't go to that situation, then he can play the entire season. I don't think they care about Brennan Sorsby. I don't think they give two cares, because they want, to your point, the NCAA filed an immediate and emergency motion for an expedited appeal requesting that the final decision of a court date be no later than August 28th, to your point, when the season starts. Right now, that trial date is for February the 8th. That's the reason they don't want him playing the season. Let's just be blunt. I don't, as much as you and I just argued, I don't believe that he should play the season. Just so we're all clear, Joe, that's the whole reason behind this. I got to be a little honest with you. I don't, as much as I think that they should have done what they've just done, I don't think that they're going to be granted this. Because everything else revolves around judges, times, and time frames. Mm-hmm. Now, could the only thing that I could see here is that there's so much political pressure that it's moved. But political pressure by whomst? Nationally? Why would a local judge who runs in a Lubbock County court or Lubbock County to become a judge, why would he care about national pressure if legitimately he's not running for a national office? I'm going to go back to what we stated the first time about these judges. Joe, when before this whole Sorsby thing came to a final decision, we talked about this being career and political suicide. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this isn't career and political suicide if you grant the NCAA's motion to move this up to August the 28th. How is it not? Joe, I got to be real with you. I think they're going to lose this. I don't think that they're going to get it, and I don't think they're going to be granted an emergency appeal on this. I just don't see it happening because, again, where do these judges run for election? Where?
In the area, yeah.
In the area. And by the way, we all know this. Joe, I don't know how where you're from, how they do this, but where I'm from, we have parishes, not counties. So a judge runs for three different counties, or in Louisiana case, a parish. So they're over the jurisdiction of three parishes or counties. So what? You went and got a judge from an adjoining county that ruled in Sorsby's favor. He still runs in a Lubbock County system, in a judicial system. So it didn't matter. Joe, I'm sorry. As much as I can back them here, as much as you and I just argued, I still don't believe that he should play. However, I just don't see a world. Why would they do that? And let me ask you this question. I'm just throwing out something random. What makes Brennan Sorsby's case more important than mine? Like, let me ask you an example. Let's say that the judge has to rule on something. Let's just say somebody stole something. What makes Brennan Sorsby's situation more important than mine? That's why the trial dates are set when they're set. The court system doesn't work like that. If there's one thing, yes, you're right, I'm not an attorney, but if there's one thing I don't know, judges aren't going to move based off of, they're going to work on their own schedule. So maybe because of the political pressure, they move it up. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't they just not make a ruling?
Yeah, I think
I don't see a world. Look, as much as I want to, Joe, I don't know if I see a world where a judge is going to say, why would I put that political pressure on me to overrule what's already been done?
Yeah, I think I do agree with you. I think that, one, the ability to move up, I believe that they're asking. Oh, no, they want to adjudicate the case by August 20th. So they do want to move the case up.
Yeah, before August 20th. So it's not correct.
Right. The intention with that, I don't think they'll get it moved up to your point. If they got it moved up, it's a major win, because what that ultimately does, even though to your point, the Texas judges are probably going to rule in favor of Sorsby, it is a massive risk for them, for Sorsby and his camp to do that. Because if theoretically those judges felt differently, like the Tennessee judge did with Aguilar and changed his mind, if any of that stuff comes to fruition and he gets ruled ineligible and he's not allowed to play, sitting out the entire year and allowing for the NFL to sit around and do its digging is only going to hurt him. Oh. He would probably go undrafted, at least in the supplemental draft, when there's not enough true time to figure out what the heck happened. Somebody will take a flyer on him with a day three pick, at the very, very least. So this, at least, it's less about winning the case to me. If you get it moved up to August 28th, it's pressuring Sorsby and his agent and his lawyers to decide, look, is playing this year really that important to you? Or do you want a chance to make it to the NFL? That's what it'll come down to.
If I'm Sorsby, I'm sitting out a year. If it comes down to it, either I'm going back to college or I'm sitting out a year, because people have, Joe, what's one thing that we know? People have very short memories. You know what they're going to say? They're going to say, well, look, he got help. He bought his time. Give him a second chance. We've literally had people. I don't want to go there, but we've literally had people shoot people before and nothing's come of it. After a year, everybody's like, oh, they paid their penance. I'm just going to throw this out there, by the way, but I know we got to go. Mike Vick served prison time.
Right. And he got back on the field. It's to your point. I just don't know how. I don't think he gets to go back to college, but like, yeah.
By the way, in a much more conservative society, like, we're more liberal of giving people second chances, in my humble opinion. Maybe that's just me. All right.
Yeah.
Jamie Post says, how did you two meet? Joe wouldn't stop leaving me alone.
I'm actually Blake's uncle, for anyone who didn't.
Yeah. My mom and dad had kids when they were 50.
Blake and I was a producer, and Blake's show was on Believe, and I was a producer for Believe, and I wanted to do more, and my boss told me to talk to Blake, and we started the Saturday morning show, and we didn't know enough about each other. We started screaming at each other, and people liked the screaming at each other, so we turned that into an actual show instead of like a Saturday morning pregame show, and the rest is history.
Yeah, CBS really loved it. They might not love it. They love it now. Underdog says, bring Josh Pate back on the pod. We'll have to give him a call and see if he's open to it. OKC with a $5 super chat says, love the show, fellas. I love Blake getting triggered by Cody Campbell even more. Wreck him. No, you know what it is, Joe? I don't think that a person who's got millions of dollars should be able to pay attorney generals whatever money that they want to be able to do whatever they want. Speaking of your mark and bylaws, let me ask a question. Why wouldn't you go after Cody Campbell for admitting on a podcast on Outkick that you're paying for play for Brendan Sorsby? That's literally against your bylaws. So why? Like, there are things that have been said. You tweeted this earlier. I'm about to give you so much credit. You literally said earlier in the day, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but you said something to the extent of Texas Tech should have shut their mouths. Literally everything that they said, your mark could literally go in a court system, in a federal court system, and say, hey, their lead booster and board or head of the Board of Regents literally said that he was going to pay for play for Brendan Sorsby, yes. And that's against the rules. Again, I ask about that part. I'm not going to bring up eligibility. Why couldn't you bring up that? Why couldn't you enforce that rule? Why couldn't you use that as a target? The man should have shut his mouth, but he's too narcissistic to do it.
No, them continuously talking, that was kind of the big premise of the segment that got lost in our yelling. The big premise is that they've talked way too much and they're digging themselves holes. They're building cases against themselves.
Insane. All right. Me and Joe are, well, we won't, we're going to be not friends for 30 minutes. If everybody thinks we're not friends, that's real. All right. We'll see y'all Wednesday. Peace.